have a recurring nightmare. I'm perched in a swanky office, encircled by executives, having just unveiled my grand pitch. The air is thick with anticipation, smiles abound, and discussions of our promising future collaboration fill the room. The deal is sealed, contracts inked, and a cool 250 grand secures its place in my bank account. It's the epitome of success. Yet, as the dream unfurls, the room takes an unsettling turn. In a twisted dance reminiscent of a cross between Hunter S. Thompson's Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas and the surreal imagery of Soundgarden's Black Hole Sun music video, the ambience morphs into a phantasmagoric nightmare. The executive smiles get a little too large, their faces elongate, contorting into lizard-like visages. The air is punctuated by raucous laughter as they guzzle endless flutes of champagne, their reptilian grins widening. The scene takes on an eerie Wonderland-esque quality as I, like Alice, begin to diminish in stature. The room spins in a disorientating whirl, and in this bizarre fusion of reality and absurdity, the businessmen, now more lizard than human, revel in their surreal amusement. As I shrink smaller and smaller, their laughter echoes, a cacophony that haunts the edges of reason. It's a psychological descent into the abyss, a nightmarish journey that transcends the boundaries of ordinary fears. Thankfully, that's not what happened. I said no to the 250 grand that was offered and I walked away. I made a choice, a big choice, and it was the best choice I've ever made. Chasing big clients was the wrong idea. In fact, it was the worst idea. Sadly, I was quite good at it, so long story short, I ended up sitting down in the very fancy London offices of a large corporate entity. And yeah, you will have heard of them, but I'm not saying. I did my well-rehearsed pitch and I nailed it. We knew we'd got the gig, so we grabbed an overpriced coffee and headed home. And that's when the panic attack started. A panic attack is a sudden and intense surge of fear or anxiety that can happen without any apparent reason. I've had them all my life, but I generally have them under control and they only boil over if something is very, very wrong. It usually reaches its peak within minutes and can be a frightening and overwhelming experience. Some people, like me, also experience a sense of being detached from reality. During a panic attack, I often have the strong urge to escape the situation. But as I was going to be in a moving vehicle for a couple of hours and at this point in my life I wasn't comfortable acknowledging them or talking about them to others, I was embarrassed about them. It's stupid, I know, but that's where I was. So I sat, unable to breathe or talk properly, trying to calm myself down. It was when I thought about quitting the whole deal that my breathing started to steady. It was then, at that moment, sitting in my business partner's car, that I decided, fuck it, I'm out. No more disconnected. I'll just make art and sell it somehow. Not feeling dizzy now. Hell, I'll go busking if I have to. No more chest pains. And that was the entire journey, or at least that's the only memory I have left of it. But the whole painful experience gave me a profound insight into what I really value. It was time to take a step back and reconsider the path. I thought to myself, this is the thing I love more than anything else, and I'm good at it, but doing it your way makes it suck. You don't care about the same things as me, and that's a problem. Actually, that's always been the problem. It's been the same problem every step of the way. How on God's earth did I end up here? I'm going to have to rethink this entire thing. In the labyrinth of life, when you find yourself staring at a dead end, the wisdom lies in recognizing that sometimes the only viable option is to backtrack. It's a profound realization, a strategic retreat in the chessboard of existence. Confronted with an impasse, the act of retracing your steps is not a surrender, but a tactical move, an acknowledgement that the current path may not lead to the desired destination. Backing up is not a sign of defeat, but rather a courageous response to the realities of the terrain. It requires a certain humility, an acceptance that the chosen route may not be the most fruitful. This retrace allows for a recalibration of strategies, a chance to reassess the landscape and discover alternative avenues that might have been overlooked in the pursuit of the forward march. Realizing I was at a dead end was one thing. What to do about it was another thing entirely. In the absence of any real direction, I started hanging out with a couple of artist friends, deciding not to be too hasty when making my next move. I did the first smart thing I'd done for a long time and gave myself time to think. I didn't know it at the time, but the next opportunity to step back and take stock wouldn't come until somebody closed the world down for a year. And the fallout from it, an 8-month moment of introspection and redirection, would see a similar seismic shift in my priorities in life beyond 2020. The act of backing up in the face of a dead end allows us to anticipate the unforeseen turns that lie ahead in the unfolding narrative of our journey. Define what success is to you before you chase it. It's not the same for everyone. We all have different priorities and they're all valid. You do you. It took getting right to the point of signing on the dotted line, almost doing the deal with the devil, for me to finally understand the vastness of my own mistake. Not all clients are a good fit. Sometimes it's clients that make a dream job a nightmare. Pretty soon you find yourself sitting at your desk thinking, this is the thing I love above anything else and it sucks. Why am I doing this? You have to find the right clients. Clients that fit the way you work before you start worrying about how much they'll pay you. If you don't, and you allow the wrong clients to dictate everything you do, your portfolio and all your future work will be at risk. Don't be scared to turn down gigs that don't match your style of working or your personal values. Be choosy, be gutsy. You may not make as much money, but you'll be happy, and that's invaluable. Looking back on this part of the story, this is quite a low point for me, to be honest with you. I realise now, because this is quite a few years ago now, this is a very positive and also very negative part of my life. I wasn't in a particularly good place, if I'm perfectly honest with you. I didn't realise it at the time until I was in that car journey, quite how wrong I'd got everything. What had happened was, I was, you know, as I was telling you before, I'd left publishing, formed my own little agency. Agency makes it sound fancy. It was just me working in a garden shed in my garden and trying to do really good work. You know, I'd kind of thought, well, I'll get into making album covers and, you know, advertising for music brands and stuff. I guess believing that music brands would be different and album covers would be different from any other commercial form of art. And even though I did a little bit of that work and I did some really cool projects that I'm really proud of, the bulk of it, the stuff that was paying the bills, was just the most mind-numbing nonsense that you can imagine. And the people I was working with or working for just didn't care about the outcome. They didn't really care whether it was any good or bad. As long as it sold the product, they didn't really give a damn. Do you know what? It just made me so despondent that I was making a living. I'm doing this thing that I love, but I don't actually love it. I'm going in every day to work and phoning stuff in, getting it done, getting a check. And it had taken all of the passion out of what I was doing. Rather than walk away, because I'm getting older by this point and walking away is becoming less and less viable, I decided, fuck it, if you can't beat them, join them, right? I put a suit on, cut my hair, got myself a pair of get-along glasses and joined the rat race. So I could have been very successful. I mean, successful is relative, because if you're not happy, are you successful, I guess? The magnitude of the deal that we were pitching was so much that it jumped the needle out the groove. You really had to ask questions because, you know, the deal involved signing up for an indefinite period of time. So this could be your life for the rest of your life. Quite honestly, I think it did me an enormous favour. If I'd have not got that opportunity and I'd have just carried on making pizza flyers and German street cleaner adverts, then maybe I would have just carried on just trudging along. But the size of this deal meant that that's it, you know, you're signed up, you're committed for minimum periods of time and enormous amounts of work and really, really dull work, you know, really corporate, just absolute fucking garbage, you know. And I guess also the people that I was sitting in the meeting with and all the people that I'd met up to that point that had got us to that meeting and the pitch and everything, I just didn't like any of them. You know, I mean, I don't necessarily think they're bad people. They're just very different people from me with a completely different set of objectives. Money is the goal. And I think with me, money is the byproduct of doing amazing work and being really great at it. and communicating. I couldn't get through to these people that it takes just as much time to make something shit as it does to make something amazing and beautiful and brilliant and world-changing. So why don't we do that? And they're like, no, just make the logo bigger. It was just soul-destroying. It really was. And I think all creative people get to this point at some point in their life. You get into it with this mad passion for drawing. You just want to make beautiful tattoos as the best you can possibly do. Slowly but surely, you know, clients come in and they, you know, they don't have the greatest ideas, but they really want them. And you really need to get paid because you got to pay the rent and you got to keep the heat on and, you know, you got to pay your bills. And so you do a few of them. And then before you know it, you're doing a few more of them. And then before you know it, I think like any creative person, you can look around 10 years later and go, what have I done? I'm not doing anything that I want to do. Unfortunately, what I've realized over the years, now I've, you know, I'm a bit older and I've got a bit of perspective on things, is that wherever there's art, there will always be commerce, because the whole point of art is to make it and share it with people. The moment you share it, if people like it, then somebody somewhere will know how to monetize that. We're not always necessarily focused on money first. We focus on the art first, or, you know, whatever that art is, whether it's music, painting, tattooing, it doesn't really matter. We focus on make these beautiful things. If we get paid, then great, you know. I think a lot of people in any creative field will tell you that the most joyous part of their creative life was the beginning, because when you've got, you know, all of the excitement and you haven't yet been beaten down by the commercial pressures of just being a creative person and people wanting to turn what you do into something that they can make money out of, that's when you're really in the sweet spot. You know, for a lot of people, the best part is being the apprentice, because you get to do all the fun stuff, learn, there's no commercial pressure, and then all of a sudden you look up, you realise that, you know, this thing that you used to love, you don't really love it anymore. You don't go to work excited. You know, you can be a photographer that doesn't really like taking photos. You can be a painter that doesn't really care about painting anymore. For a lot of people, by the time you realise that, it's too late to change. I was fortunate enough that it was just about the last possible chance that I would have to make a big change in my life. And I know a lot of you guys that watch the Tattoo Show are at that point. You know, you've worked another job and have got, you know, far enough down the road that you realise you hate it and then decide to take up tattooing. You know, sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but commercial pressure does still exist in all creative art forms, and you do still have to deal with it in some way. And you have to balance it. I'm trying to think of what my takeaway from this would be. Because to do this, to get out of this situation, what I had to do was, you know, do that cinematic thing of like the Zippo, flick it over my shoulder and burn it to the ground. I mean, that was the only way out, was to just walk away from a burning building. And that burning building was my agency and my job as a graphic designer. And sometimes that's a very, very scary thing to do. And like I say, the magnitude of this job and what I was potentially going to sign up for, and the fact that it gave me one of the worst panic attacks of my life, was enough to make me go, I can't do this. It's going to kill me. I just don't recognise myself. I don't recognise any of the people around me. I don't really like any of the people around me. It's incredibly toxic. It's incredibly disingenuous. Nobody seemed to really care about the products that they were making or selling. They just wanted to make money. And I've got no problem with making money. It's just that I want to make art first. And I may be still naively, all of my heroes who are millionaire musicians and artists were the best in their field first, and the money was a byproduct of that. And so I guess for me, what I wanted to do was find myself in a place where I could make beautiful art, have the money be a byproduct of being really good. The kind of client that I was looking for didn't exist in the place I was working in, the genre that I was working in, the, you know, that kind of commercial art thing. The clients there, they're selling products and they want you to make bottles of shampoo sell. For me, the only escape route, maybe for a lot of you guys out there, is exactly the same. The only escape route was to change the job market that I was in. I'm trying to think of the right word for that. I'm struggling with words this evening. So it became apparent that I was going to have to change lane, change my job and do something different and find a place where I could be a creative person with the kind of clients that I wanted to have. I was looking for people that wanted to buy art,
not have me do my job to sell their product for them. That's what I set about looking for. So my advice to you, if you're finding yourself in this place, take the bold move, would be my advice. It's the best thing that I did, was to change what I was doing. Flick the Zippo over your shoulder, burn it all down, start all over again. Might take you a minute, you know, it certainly took me a minute to get things back on track. But that decision, born out of this situation that I found myself in, was quite easily the best decision I ever made. It's one of the most difficult decisions I ever made and one of the scariest decisions I ever made. Don't get me wrong, it was terrifying. I had a lot of late night conversations with Karen about, you know, what are you going to do about all this? You know, sometimes, you know, you have to realise that you've travelled down a road far enough that you find yourself at a dead end. Anybody that's driven a car down a dead end will tell you that occasionally the only thing that you can do to move forward is to hit reverse and back up. And so that's exactly what I did. I started to work out, how am I going to back up out of this? Because you don't just burn a building down when you've got a business, you have to finish the jobs that you're doing and stuff. So I used that period of time to lick my wounds and decide what the next stage of my life was going to be and think carefully about all of the things that had made me uncomfortable and unhappy with my life and my job, and make sure that I found an industry that I could work in. That was the word I was looking for, industry. I wanted to change industry to find better clients. Now, you might find that you're in the right industry, but you need to get better clients or different clients, because clients might be absolutely great. They just might not want the kind of thing that you want to do. So find those clients that will pay you to do what you want to do. Now, they might pay you less, and you'll have to make your life work that way if you want happiness. To end on a hopeful note, it's not the end of the world. You can see it from here, but it's not actually the end of the world. It's a scary decision to change industry or to change the way you do things, but you have to be prepared to do that if you want happiness. And now I'm on the other side of that decision and gone from being a graphic designer to being a tattooist and making my own artwork for, you know, clients who love what I do and will give me the freedom to do what I do and are perfectly happy for me to make art for them the way I see it. It's the best decision that I ever made. Difficult decision, but the best decision. Sometimes the scary decisions and the big decisions are the ones that you have to make, and you have to run straight forward. And as you're running towards that, you know, you can always look over your shoulder and look at the burning building, because sometimes burning buildings are pretty. I guess with that, that's the best advice I can give you. If you find yourself in a dead end or a cul-de-sac, sometimes the best way to go forward is to reverse, retrace your steps and try a different path. Focus on the art first, make the art, and then set about finding an audience that will buy that art from you. And never trust anybody who wears a blue tie. So with that, this has been I Beg to Differ. I hope this was helpful. I hope it was food for thought. I hope the nightmare scenario at the beginning didn't give you too many bad dreams. Just enough to focus your mind to make big, scary decisions when you need to. And with that, this has been I Beg to Differ. I've been Paul, and I'll see you next time. Take care, guys. I Beg to Differ is available in video format on YouTube, in audio format wherever you listen to podcasts, and in its written form in Total Tattoo Magazine, every issue.